Good morning, Connecticut, and to our friends across the Sound. And welcome to the first weekend of March. It's Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. Thanks for tuning into our award-winning public affairs program for the people, bringing you the latest information to help address concerns in our communities tied to youth, the economy, public health and safety, aging, education, and the environment. So, who doesn't like chocolate? Well, if you do, we're going to be talking about a great event coming up next weekend, the 26th Annual Chocolate and Food Festival benefiting Easter Seals, serving Greater Waterbury, Central, and Northwest Connecticut. We're also going to hear about some of the great programs that will continue flourishing thanks to your participation and support of this scrumptious event. Then we'll meet the co-founder of a brand new working group that's committed to working with state officials and lawmakers to find ways to reduce your local property taxes. Stick around and learn more about Connecticut's brand new Tax Policy Collaborative. And we're going to close with Beth Bai, a former and respected state legislator tapped by Governor Ned Lamont to lead the Connecticut Office of Early Childhood. We'll key in on a few things of import happening in the current legislative session that can have a positive impact on our youngest residents and a program to save infant lives through the OEC's Safe Sleep Initiative. We'll be back with these segments and more on the award-winning For the People with me, John Voquette, right after this reminder. Hey, are you an active adult or student looking for a great way to stay busy while helping others? Well, join the Wesley Village Volunteer Team. Wesley Village in Shelton is currently looking for active adult and student volunteers to share their interests and experiences with residents. Lead an arts and crafts class, play cards and games, call bingo, cook and bake, share your musical talent, help with clerical tasks, visit with a resident one-on-one, lead a spiritual program, assist with special events, or offer your time and talents in other ways. There's plenty to do at Wesley Village. To get involved, call 203-944-8279 or just visit wesleyvillage-ct.org.
For 60 years, Easter Seals has been the indispensable resource for people and families facing disability, and they believe that anyone facing a disability can reach their potential. They offer diverse programs and services supporting that belief, and we are here as the guest of Easter Seals of Greater Waterbury today, and pleased to be hanging out for a few minutes with Lorraine Shea, the CEO, and Christy Balasiano, who is the marketing and communications specialist for the organization. Lot to talk about today, but hey, one question: do you like chocolate? Well, we got chocolate for you and food. It's the 26th annual Chocolate and Food Festival, and that's coming up on Saturday, March 9th. That's next Saturday as we broadcast our show. And it's the first year they're holding it at the Naugatuck Event Center down on Rubber Avenue from noon to 5. We really want to bring you guys in for this event. So if you like chocolate and food and that kind of stuff, you're going to want to stay tuned and listen. We're going to be talking about that in just a little while. But first, let's chat with Lorraine Shea, the CEO here at Easter Seals of Greater Waterbury, and get a little bit of backstory. Certainly, can't talk about details of that, a lot of the details of those 60 years, Lorraine. But what is Easter Seals 2019 all about, and what are some of the similarities that you still retain today that were part of the organization when it was founded six decades ago?
Well, I think that our mission has remained the same for the entire 60 years. We are a disability services organization, and our goal is really to help individuals and their families meet their individual goals, regardless of their situation. And we work with them in a variety of different programs. I think the one thing about Easter Seals that people may not know is how many different types of individuals that we work with, how many different types of programs that we have. Mm-hmm. We basically have 7 different service lines, and we serve individuals from birth until well into their hundreds. Mm-hmm. And so it's a pretty exciting organization. And although our services may have changed over the years, our mission has remained the same. And that is to make sure that we give people the skills and the abilities and the support to live their fullest life.
And I see you serve a pretty broad swath of northwestern and central western Connecticut. Can you tell us a little bit about where your jurisdiction begins and ends for folks that might be listening on the stations up in Torrington or over in Meriden?
Sure. We service the greater Waterbury, northwest, central Connecticut area. But I say that with a caveat because we also provide services down in the Norwich area, New London, Willimantic. Our Birth to Three program is actually in those communities. So I say that with that little caveat. Mm-hmm. But yes, we stretch all the way up to Torrington, well over to Danbury, Newtown, Southbury, Meriden, Wallingford. Okay. And, of course, the greater Waterbury, Cheshire, Naugatuck area.
Mm-hmm. Do you also go all the way up to the northwest corner, up to, like, Winchester and Norfolk and up that way?
We do. We do. Now, our program locations might not be there, but right. We service individuals from those communities. Oh, okay. If they have needs, we will service them. Yes.
And down in the southeast in the New London area, is it still called Easter Seals of Greater Waterbury, but it's just like a field office?
That's correct. And the services down there, as I said, are specific to Birth to Three early intervention services.
Gotcha. Well, let's talk about those services. You said there were seven. We may not hit them all. But Birth to Three is such a key period of time to best identify whether or not a child has any type of a disability or an issue and to qualify them for services and try to kind of figure out the way to get them off on the right foot toward a healthy, happy, and productive life. Tell us a little bit about how you help parents or caregivers identify issues and then get the children into the specialized type of programming that will serve them best and create that foundation that they're going to need.
Okay. So I think one thing that people don't realize about Birth to Three services that any individual can refer a child to Birth to Three services. And once the referral has been made, the a provider picks up that child, for lack of a better term. Easter Seals is one of those providers. We send a team of one or two individuals to the child's home. All of the services are provided in the home. We are not a center-based model here in Connecticut. All services are provided in their living situation. Mm-hmm. And if their living situation involves them going to a daycare during the day, the services would be provided there. The team is made up of individuals including occupational therapy, physical therapy, speech therapy, behavior therapists, particularly if a child is on the autism spectrum, special education teachers. They provide evaluation, and then they put together a plan. And sometimes all of those disciplines are involved, and sometimes just one of those disciplines is involved. And the goal is to help the family members continue with the therapies or the interventions when the therapist is not there, and to gradually wean that child off of those interventions. And the research shows that if these teams are involved early on, when the child is between the ages of birth to three, there's a good chance that once they turn three, they may not need special services when they go into the education setting. However, if they do, our team is there to make those referrals so that once they reach the age of three, they go onto the education system and those services get continued.
Well, could you give a ballpark idea of what proportion of your audience that you serve transitions from birth to three into school readiness versus those who come to Easter Seals, at that kind of pre-K, kindergarten, first grade point in their lives?
So are we talking about transitioning from birth to three to school readiness?
To school readiness, yeah.
I don't know the exact numbers, but we certainly do accept children of all abilities in our school readiness programs.
Oh, okay.
So if a child has been in the birth to three services and they're ready for school readiness, they can apply for admission to one of our four programs, which we have here in Waterbury and in Meriden.
Okay.
And also, there are school readiness programs in the public schools, and Easter Seals also provide services in the public schools. As a coordinated partner, we in Waterbury, we actually provide the behavior therapy services in the school readiness program there.
Super.
Yes.
When I walked into the lobby, I was surrounded with posters about better hearing and a nice showcase of all kinds of hearing related and audiology equipment. And that is one of the areas that you folks kind of have a little specialty niche in. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Absolutely. Our Easter Seals Center for Better Hearing is one of our largest service areas. We actually have three locations, one right here in Waterbury, one in Meriden, and a brand new one that we just opened up in Southbury just last summer. We have four full-time audiologists that are fabulous, and they work with small, young children, like we said, from birth, all the way up into their hundreds. We have patients who have been coming to us for years for all of their hearing needs. And it starts with an evaluation, you know, a diagnostic test if you feel that perhaps you need that for your hearing. And then it goes all the way up to continued testing throughout your lifespan, as well as the ability to get hearing aids if they're appropriate or other adaptive hearing devices.
Very good. Folks, if you're just joining us, we're talking with Lorraine Shea and Christy Balasiano's with us as well, both representing Easter Seals of Greater Waterbury, serving a massive part of the state of Connecticut, 30 towns across our state, mostly the central and northwestern corner, but also, as you heard if you're with us a little bit earlier, some services down in the New London and southeastern area as well. They have a great festival coming up, and we'll talk to Christy about that in a few minutes. But if you've got to go, don't go before you consider getting your tickets early and getting a little discount on them, because the 26th Annual Chocolate and Food Festival is coming up next Saturday, March 9th from 12 to 5 at the Naugatuck Event Center right in here in central Connecticut. Really easy to find right off of Route 8 near the 84 Interchange if you're listening elsewhere in the far reaches of the state or out there on Long Island or our friends down in Westchester County or New York who might be listening. Hey, this is an event that's not to be missed. And if you like chocolate, it's really the event you want to go to. So we'll talk about that in just a little while. But first, I want to talk about another partnership. We heard about how Easter Seals of Greater Waterbury is partnering with some of the school districts on audiology, but you're also partnering with the Lions Club for sight. So it's not just about the ears, it's about the eyes, too. Tell us about that.
We were really fortunate to establish a relationship with the Lions Club here in this area. We recently hired a new occupational therapist at our rehab center in Meriden, and she came to us with a different skill set. Mm-hmm. And she actually specializes in low vision programming. So we partnered with the Lions Club, who already knew our therapist. Her name is Rachel. Mm. And again, the Lions Club, as we all know, is a longtime civic organization, and their kind of niche is visually impaired. So what we've done through this partnership is that they provide us at no cost to us adaptive devices that a patient may need to actually perform daily living tasks if they have low vision. Low vision is defined as a visual problem that can't be corrected with lenses or with surgery. And so sometimes there's different pieces of equipment that can be used that will help somebody read or see at a different level. Mm-hmm. And so our Rachel, our low vision therapist, is now open in Meriden at 158 State Street, and she's taking referrals for that. And if an individual does need some kind of specialized equipment, that can be provided at no cost. Thank you to the Lions Club for that.
Excellent. Well, before we talk about the 26th Annual Chocolate and Food Festival, let's hit one other key point, because I'm sure you've got to be proud of the fact that Easter Seals of Greater Waterbury provides this driver assessment program, apparently only one of two in the state. Are both of them with Easter Seals, or is this something that you and another agency do in the two locations?
Yeah, we have one of the centers, Easter Seals does. It's actually spearheaded by Rachel, the same therapist I just spoke about. And the goal of the driver assessment program is for individuals who may have had some kind of a disabling condition, or maybe reaching a point where they're not quite sure that they should be driving, or may need some adaptive equipment to drive. She brings them in, does an assessment, and can bring them through that process. That's also located in Meriden. at 158 State Street. Mm-hmm. And that's a very, very busy program because she's one therapist. So we are very proud of that program as well. We've been doing that for probably over 20 years. We also partner with the state of Connecticut through the Department of Rehab Services. Mm. We get many referrals from them for individuals who need adaptive devices for their vehicles.
Mm. It sounds like with a lot of the kind of hardware and equipment that you folks help provide, you also probably have a network of partners or contacts that are the suppliers of that. How does that work?
Well, we've already talked about the Lions Club in terms of
for the driving.
Those are very specialized pieces of equipment or vans. And so we do work with mobility specialists on that. Yes. But what I will say, and I know we're going to talk about our event in a bit, is that all of these services don't come cheap. And the majority of our funding does come from a governmental payer. And we all know what kind of condition our state budgets are in, and so on. So we really do depend very heavily on fundraising to help support some of these programs.
Yeah, truly one of the greatest challenges as government subsidies and other sources like that start retracting or even level off, because obviously need is growing. It's not decreasing or leveling off, especially with services that are helping folks who may be aging, like the driving assessment or the audiology. You know, as our older population begins to explode, you're really going to probably continue seeing a real uptick in services. So that's why it's really important that we get folks to come out and eat lots of chocolate and other foods. Yes, the 26th Annual Chocolate and Food Festival is coming to the Naugatuck Event Center March 9th. From 12 to 5. That's next Saturday as our broadcast plays for you this morning. And we're going to talk about that and wrap up with Christy Balasiano. She's a marketing and communications specialist here at Easter Seals of Greater Waterbury. So 26 years of chocolate and fun for Easter Seals, Christy. Tell us a little bit more about what folks need to know about the event if they haven't already bought their tickets. Because I guess over the next couple of days, at least up until the day of the event, folks can get a little bit of a discount on those tickets.
Yep, there is advanced ticket sales. You can get your tickets for $20, and at the door, they are $25. This event is for people of all ages, children all the way up to however old you are. You know, as long as you want to eat chocolate and some scrumptious foods and taste your way through the Naugatuck Event Center, you are welcome to join us.
And this is the first year that you're holding the event at the Naugatuck Event Center because the prior events have been so popular that they've kind of filled up the room. And as people are filling up on chocolate and getting a little bigger at each and every one of them, you want some elbow room, right?
Well, yeah, exactly. This is actually the second time we've done it. No, that's okay. This is the second time we've done it in the Naugatuck Event Center. And for so many years, each year it gets bigger and bigger. We get more popular and we have all of these wonderful vendors and sponsors who are coming in to support us. And the more people we get in, the bigger, you're right, people get full, they get bigger, they get wider, and we're okay with that. And we want people to come in and enjoy all the great things and all the great vendors that are coming in throughout Connecticut and, you know, other vendors that are local as well.
And folks that are listening, I'd say, nah, I'm not a chocolate person. Why should I go? Well, two words, food trucks.
Oh, yeah, we have food trucks. We have food trucks, and there's no one is going to leave this event hungry by any means. I mean, there is, we have chocolate bark, we have pizza, we have burgers, there is organic chocolates. Mm. There is something for everyone.
Great. And for those that like to take something home with them that may not be edible, give us a taste of a couple of the cool silent auction items or other prizes that you're having.
So some of these silent auction items we have are, we do have a partnership with Diageo. So Bailey's will be giving us some silent prizes. I can't tell you exactly what it is. Okay. King Arthur Flower is a big supporter of ours for this particular event. We are giving away to the first 1,000 people who walk in the door a chocolate cupcake mix. So that is something that everyone will take away with them, provided you are one of the first 1,000 people in the door.
Very good. And contests, chocolate eating contests, maybe?
Well, I cannot say. Oh, but okay. Yes, there are plenty of contests throughout the day, door prizes. Every one of our vendors will be giving us something to raffle off. Oh, so okay. Throughout the, you know, if you come in and you see the list of vendors, go to your favorite first. And, you know, you never know. There's raffle prizes or raffles at each table. And, you know, you can win many things.
Excellent. Well, join more than 1,300 other people who love chocolate and fun and events like this and sample this overflowing assortment of scrumptious chocolate, specialty and gourmet foods, samplings of beer and wine, all provided by more businesses than we could possibly name. But you can probably see at least a few of them if you go and get your tickets online, chocolate2019.eventbrite.com is where you can go and get those advance tickets and save yourself $5 a pop. Kids are also welcome to the event, ages 5 and 11. Those tickets are $5 in advance as well. So please do consider helping Easter Seals of Greater Waterbury and the incredible work that they've been doing now for over 60 years in this region and across Connecticut. Attend the 26th annual Chocolate and Food Festival for only the second time at the Naugatuck Event Center on Rubber Avenue in Naugatuck. It's next Saturday, March 9th from noon to 5. Once again, that website to order your tickets at a discount in advance is chocolate2019.eventbrite.com. We want to thank our guests this morning, Lorraine Shea, CEO and President, and Christy Balasiano, Marketing and Communication Specialist for Easter Seals of Greater Waterbury, serving folks throughout the state of Connecticut for 60 years and continuing to do a great job, thanks to all of the partnerships and experts that they employ and bring to the table here. So if you need to get in touch with them, eswct.com is their website. Check them out. And ladies, enjoy the chocolate. Thank you for having me. And we'll see you at the Naugatuck Event Center for the 26th Annual Chocolate and Food Festival next Saturday from noon to 5. Thanks.
Thanks very much.
Well, I was intrigued to receive an outreach message a couple of weeks ago and learned about a brand new group that's forming here in Connecticut that we think you should really be aware of. Whether you know it or not, if you're a property owner here in the state of Connecticut, you are subsidizing almost 42 cents of every dollar collected in taxes here in the state of Connecticut. So the newly formed Tax Policy Collaborative wants to do something about that by making Connecticut's tax structure simpler, fairer, and more progressive. And we are so pleased to be chatting with Susan Merrow. Sue Merrow is co-chair of the Property Tax Working Group, and she also chairs, among other things, the Connecticut Council on Environmental Quality, the CEQ, which has been a guest several times in the past on our award-winning For the People. So we'll be talking money today and taxes, Sue. So as we chatted a few moments before we turned on the mic, your CEQ business was yesterday, and it's snapping you back into the tax policy collaborative conversation today. So thanks for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
So beyond the brief introduction, let's dig in a little more and explain to folks listening both how this collaborative came together and how you hope, even as early as this current legislative session, it has some impact on bringing even an incremental relief to Connecticut's property taxpayers.
Sure. Well, this new effort, the Tax Policy Collaborative, is actually a project of something called 1,000 Friends of Connecticut, which is started out to be a smart growth organization about 20 years ago, and over time has evolved into one of the most critical issues in how we make decisions about growing smart in Connecticut is tax policy, and particularly property taxes, because property taxes have the capacity to drive really bad land use decisions. When you have 169 towns each competing for to trying to grow their grand lists and competing with one another for tax ratables, it can cause them to make decisions that are not necessarily good for the environment, which was what drew me into this organization and into this interest. But there are a number of people who are concerned about tax policy and property taxes, people who are concerned about fairness, about equity, about education, about municipal government, and working together to find ways to, as we say, rebalance the tax structure and make it more fair and more equitable. Mm. So this latest effort was a project that grew out of a group that's been meeting for a couple of years talking about tax policy. And we've put on some conferences and we've testified but it seemed to us that it's very hard to find data. It's hard to find information. It's hard to find ways to communicate with one another about these issues. And so we thought that a website would be our next project, a next step to take. And that's what brought us to you.
Mm-hmm. And so at the highest and most general level, how do you, and really this, I mean, when you read the list, and I would refer listeners to the organization's website, which is simply taxpolicyct.org. I mean, even if you don't know any of the names of those who have affiliated with this organization, when you look at the positions and situations that these individuals have held and served, it is a impressive group of deep thinkers and long tenured government and policymakers. So certainly a worthy consortium. But at the core level, what do you think this organization might be able to do in this very first year of the Lamont administration, where so much attention is being paid to kind of, you know, turning the Titanic a little bit more safely from the iceberg fields? How can some effect be made to the benefit of taxpayers?
Well, the first, of course, the governor, we have a new administration, and the first and most critical thing that we were all watching and waiting for was the governor's budget address. And our first hope was that that the new administration would do no harm. And the governor has worked very hard to try to not pass the burden down to municipalities. He's making some tinkering around the edges with the ECS formula, but maintaining pretty much maintaining town aid and some of the grants like town aid for roads and other things. There's the beginnings of thinking about things like regionalism and looking for ways to promote shared services and ways for towns to get the expenditure side under control through regionalism. There are bills being heard, I think, within the week about working together with something called ACIR, which will gather data about shared services and creating incentives for towns to share services. So I think that those are good starts. As I said, the first thing was to do no harm. Mm. So, and then, you know, hopefully get people beginning to talk about ways as we move forward to dig out of the fiscal crisis to make possibly only incremental, but steps toward things that will help relieve property taxes, like finding ways to increase pilot payments in lieu of taxes to municipalities, to hopefully consider ways when funding is sent to towns for schools to consider what we call the needs capacity gap, the fact that towns vary greatly in their capacity to raise tax dollars as compared to the need that they have to provide education, and how to ways to close those gaps. We've seen some bills already about sales tax sharing, you know, the notion of allowing towns to keep some percentage of any sales tax increase to be kept in municipalities. We have, you know, some suggestions on how that could be made fairer and better, because we don't want to just increase the competition between towns, but there are ways maybe to distribute some sort of locally raised revenue regionally other ways. But we generally sense that there's an openness in the new administration to all of these ideas, and we're very, very pleased and encouraged by that.
Excellent. We're chatting with Sue Merrow, who is the co-chair of the Property Tax Working Group. TaxPolicyCT.org is the website of the Tax Policy Collaborative, which is using that website and social media to share the latest news, perspectives, and relevant background as issues are considered by state policymakers in the current and future sessions of our legislature. We've got a couple more questions for Susan and a little bit more to learn about the Tax Policy Collaborative. We're going to take a quick break. Please stick with us, and we'll be right back. Do you love Connecticut? If you do, there are hundreds of nonprofit agencies, community groups, and grassroots causes that would love to have your support. You can learn about many of them through Love CT. Just go to our radio station website, hit the event guide tab, and click on to Love CT to help the many causes supported by Connoisseur Media. This is Director of Public Affairs, John Voquette. We'll be back to the award-winning For the People right after this news. The Kennedy Center, providing services to 2,200 individuals with disabilities across our state, is accepting applications from individuals and families interested in becoming a Community Companion Home, or CCH, through the Connecticut Department of Developmental Services. A CCH is a residential program connecting individuals with intellectual disabilities to families interested in opening their homes and their lives. The Kennedy Center matches licensees and individuals based on lifestyle, preferences, and needs. Ongoing support, comprised of nursing, behavior, and case management, is provided by the Kennedy Center, and licensees receive reimbursement for room and board, along with a stipend for care of the individual based on need. Anyone interested in learning more or starting an application process can call 203-365-8522 or just visit kennedyctr.org. Thanks for staying with us. Susan Merrow is here. She is co-chair of the Property Tax Working Group, TaxPolicyCT.org for the Tax Policy Collaborative, which is focusing on ways to reduce the share of total state and local revenue collected from property taxes and do so in a way that advances economic growth and minimizes adverse land use decisions. So, Sue, I guess my first question is, either in your opinion or if you could hint at whether or not there's any consensus, do you or do any members of the group believe that this is the first way of shaking Connecticut away from this 169 towns, 169 operating systems, budgets, municipal and educational services? Are we poised at the brink of a historical change in the way Connecticut and its towns and cities look at themselves and act with their neighbors?
I would have to say that that I don't know that it's a very quick change, but over my years of working in the public policy arena, I've seen an increasingly a change in the attitudes towards regionalism, and in towns beginning to think of themselves not as insular or little fiefdoms, but beginning to really think about the economies of scale and the enhancement of services that they can offer if they team up with regions. And the councils of governments are working hard to find ways to. I know that the one of our group members is the head of the executive director of the Northeastern Council of Governments, who is done a lot of very sort of groundbreaking regional work where they have shared assessing, and they have a shared animal control, and they're working on a number of ways that have kept their expenses down. And of course, CROG, the Central Connecticut, the Connecticut Council of Governments for Central Connecticut, is renowned for their purchasing collectives and so forth. And even just in my discussions with neighbors and friends, people are beginning to talk about ways that maybe their school systems could collaborate with one another and offer more and better services. And a few years ago, you couldn't even say the R word, you know, where you would be, if you did anything, it seemed like you were...
Run out of town with pitchforks.
I know. Yes, run out of town, tarred and feathered. So yes. I see, I think, quite big changes in the areas of regionalism.
That's great. The other thing that we're certainly hearing a lot about are tolls and sales tax increases, or at least applying sales taxes to services and entities that weren't previously taxed to sort of right size or modernize the sales. I'm sorry, the sales tax system. Is there some idea that any potential future revenue that can be taken, maybe not from the tolls, because this, one would assume a lot of that revenue would be going back into road and bridge maintenance and improvement, but on the side of the sales tax increases and expansions, is there some idea that could either mitigate further increases that could roll down onto property owners at the local property tax level, or providing some offset in some ways to perhaps even, dare I say, even in the future, act to eventually lower the burden of property taxes to the individual property owners in Connecticut?
Well, as a matter of fact, there's actually a bill, I think it's Senate Bill 475, that was heard last week at the LOB that proposed a 0.5% sales tax increase that would be retained in the towns in which it was raised. We have some concerns about we applaud the effort to find ways to get revenue down to the local level. If you have towns competing with one another for that revenue, or you know, if you have a town that has a much better capacity to raise sales taxes, it exacerbates the town against town issues. Yeah. Unless you find a way to distribute that revenue regionally.
Yeah, that's a good point.
That seems as though that would show some promise if it can be rethought how the revenue would be distributed.
Yeah, it would seem inherently unfair for communities, primarily in Lower Fairfield County, that have the Interstate 95 and Boston Post Road Route 1 retail and commercial corridors, which could be potentially sales tax money machines for a lot of these communities that are already doing pretty well in terms of keeping their property taxes down and providing robust services to their residents. But then you sort of begin to graduate up toward the 84 and north of the 84 corridor, and the potential for a lot of these smaller towns, especially in the northeastern and western corners, even in towns where there's a casino or adjacent to a casino, it seems like there's no possible way, even if they're much smaller in scale, that they could raise the sales taxes that would begin to make a difference.
Yes, absolutely. That needs to be thought through. And, you know, and we also are mindful of the fact that sales taxes can be regressive, but there may be ways to target it toward things like hotel rooms or other things that are less regressive. But the distribution is the issue that we would want to see really worked through much better.
Very good. Well, we hope that our listeners begin to get an idea of the important work that the Tax Policy Collaborative has taken on as it has formalized from the 1,000 Friends of Connecticut, a more ad hoc type of a group. Our guest this morning is Susan Merrow. She's co-chair of what I've been calling a property tax working group, which is the Tax Policy Collaborative. Visit their website, taxpolicyct.org, which includes a compendium of resources on fiscal policy, links to organizations that provide up-to-date information and data on tax policies and structures, a calendar of upcoming key dates as the legislature moves through budget and tax policies, as well as news and views on unfolding issues, including the spending cap, sprawl, regionalism, and pensions. Been great to chat with you, Susan, and I hope to be able to come back and talk a little bit more with you or one of your many esteemed colleagues on the collaborative. So thank you for now for being part of our program, and best of luck.
My pleasure.
With the effort. Well, the last time I had a chance to talk with Beth Bai was up at the Weir Farm on location about a year and a half ago. And now I'm pleased to be able to welcome her back onto the award-winning For the People as Commissioner Beth Bai of the Connecticut Office of Early Childhood, a very exciting and recent promotion. If you don't know, it may be because, or if you haven't heard of the OEC, the Office of Early Childhood, it's a relatively new development here in Connecticut. It was established in 2013 to coordinate and improve various early childhood programs and components in Connecticut to create a real high quality early childhood system and to support all young children in their development. So they've certainly put a very worthy and qualified person at the top, Beth, and thank you so much for taking some time.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be on.
Very exciting. Let's, beyond that kind of boilerplate introduction, the thing that I find most interesting is that you guys have kind of like a four-pronged approach to the delivery of the types of services and support you are handling there at the OEC. Let's talk a little bit just quickly about the structure and what the most important thing people in the state need to know.
Sure. Well, I think the overarching goal of the agency is really to support child development, you know, that each child lives up to be the best that they can be. And the research is clear, and I think we all know how important those early years are for the foundational skills. So our department supports young children and their families because a lot of this, most of it happens through the families, through home visiting, you know, so we have home visitors to go out and support families who are at risk, who need a little extra support. We also run the Birth to Three program, which is a program designed to support children birth to three with special education needs before they hit the public schools. We also have a real important job around protecting the health and safety of children throughout the state by licensing family child care homes and also licensing center-based care, you know, preschools,
yes, sure,
daycares, to make sure that children are safe. And finally, we are charged with overseeing the early childhood programs of the state that support early childhood experiences for 3- and 4-year-olds who otherwise might not be able to have access to that.
Mm-hmm.
And our state's had great success increasing the number of children who have access to preschool from, in some communities, it was in the low 30s, in some of our poorest communities, in 1997 when school readiness passed, and now I think, you know, most of those communities are up above 70% of children having access to preschool. So it's an example of government working to support families where they are and support communities, because We know that when children arrive ready for kindergarten, every child in that kindergarten benefits, and the teacher is able to, do her job.
Yeah, well,
we're excited.
You'll be happy to hear. I walked into the station today, and the very first coworker I encountered is a longtime pal of mine who's in the process, hopefully in the final stages of adopting a little girl. And the first thing he said when I said, "How's things going with stuff?" he said, "Thank heavens for birth to three."
I know. So birth to three is amazing.
And just one of a thousand points of light under your leadership at the OEC. So the other thing I think is important to distinctify your office, Beth, if you would. A lot of what you talked about, if people weren't listening carefully, they might think that you're with the Department of Children and Families, because a lot of what you do is part of coordinating the safety and security, maybe not protection, but security of so many young children here in Connecticut. Do you work in concert with DCF? Or?
Absolutely. I think one of the strengths of our agency is that we work across government silos. We've brought together programs from many different agencies into one focused on young children, but we can only be successful if we work with the Department of Children and Families, with the Department of Education, with the Department of Social Services. And just as an example, I've just come back from a meeting with Health Strategy, and we're talking about home visiting as a health strategy. Mm-hmm. So we're working with the Office of Health Strategy. Governor Lamont has been very clear that he wants his agencies to be collaborating together and working in the interest of its citizens. And for me, that focus is children and families.
Mm. Well, that being said, I'm not sure if your appointment was right around the same time as the new DCF commissioner
right around the same time.
Mm-hmm. So have you sat down one-on-one yet with that colleague?
We have spoken a couple of times. Both of us are really onboarding in our agencies,
sure,
but
yeah.
We are, one thing we've talked about is working for children who are in DCF care to make sure that the foster parents have access to child care, also that they have some programs that are really therapeutic for children who've experienced trauma. How can our office work with them to support some of their child care needs? Because we get federal dollars for child care.
Mm-hmm.
She is going to be such a terrific leader over there. I think she has a vision, and she knows the work, having done it. And so we really look forward to working together, both to protect and really enhance child development. Because, DCF, just like we do, we understand how important it is to work with families and support them to support their children. And so we're excited to do that work together. Mm.
Well, as someone so long tenured in the legislature as yourself, you certainly have a deep and working knowledge of what's going on at DCF. It's funny because we just finished an interview with this new tax policy collaborative, and we talked a lot about Governor Lamont's passion for reducing costs by eliminating overlapping services and sharing services. Or regionalizing, whatever. Is there some idea at this early stage that the work that you will be doing with DCF will be initially mining the details to try to find other ways to eliminate redundancy or overlap?
I think we work really hard to be careful not to be overlapping. For example, there are only particular families that we do home visiting for that working with DCF, we determine that's really in our area. There may be, other families who need different kinds of services, and DCF works with other agencies and with their own really qualified staff doing that work. So
well, if you
that communication is critical to make sure we're not duplicating efforts.
Good. If you were to come out of this current legislative session, the first under Governor Lamont, if there was one success or one achievement that you would like to see begin to get installed or happening by summer, maybe early fall, what would that be?
Well, I think we want to the most important thing and part of what we're talking about today is keeping children safe. And so we want to make sure that we can reach families with a safe sleep campaign. We want to make sure that families in the state know that it's important to choose licensed care when picking child care. And I think really importantly, we need to work with the federal funds that we have to increase access to child care as the economy's picked up and more families are working. We need to make sure that we have the child care funds to support those families with high quality child care so they can get to work and not worry. So I think the Care for Kids program that supports working families, coming out of the session, if we can have that program enhanced a bit, make sure that we can reach even more families than we're reaching now and reach them with the kind of quality that we know families want and deserve, I think that will be a victory. And we're very lucky to have champions in the legislature like Representative Sanchez and Representative McCrory who are looking at ways to improve quality in early childhood education with some of their legislation.
Yeah, and in some small way, from an economic standpoint, it's very exciting to think that your office can play a role in not only helping improve the baseline quality of temporary or short-term child care in Connecticut, but to better empower those who are providing that service to be even more professional, more in tune with the specific needs of children and in that critical birth to three time frame, and potentially giving these folks a tool by which they can improve their own economic status.
Yes, yes, I think that's right. And some of that, like we give scholarships to child care providers who are trying to improve their sort of their standing and their practices. And we'd like to, you know, expand that because we know that as we support child care providers with better wages and more education, the beneficiaries are the families and the children.
Well, getting to the most important topic at hand to close out our visit for this morning, Commissioner Bai, certainly the loss of an infant is horribly devastating for any family and even the entire community that that family resides in here in Connecticut. So I was very heartened to hear that your office, the Office of Early Childhood, has launched this public education campaign, and we're so honored to be part of it. Tell us about safe sleep.
Yeah, we have a campaign because over the past 18 months, as you alluded to, we have had nine babies in Connecticut die predominantly because of unsafe sleep practices. Mm-hmm. That is, you know, that they may have been sleeping with the parent and suffocated, basically, or had other items in the cribs that were not safe. And so all of our licensors who go out to our 1,400 programs are reminding the centers about safe sleep and making sure the cribs are free of bumpers and free of stuffed animals and blankets. And we're bringing out sleep sacks, which are, you know, sort of like blankets that babies can sleep in that are safe, that don't get in the way if they, you know, can't get enough air. It just is not good. So we are doing that. And we have billboards, we have social media, we have purchased space to make sure we get the word out because this has been devastating for families in our state. Mm-hmm. And one thing that came up at the Child Fatalities Review Panel when we were out talking that I think is important for parents to remember is they say, well, my grandmother had my mother sleep with her, and I've had my mother sleep, you know, my mother had me sleep with her when I was a baby, and she said it wasn't a problem. Have to realize that things are changing. First of all, the knowledge base is changing, that there are some risks. But secondly, mattresses have really changed. Like when I was a kid, you know, the mattresses were different. Now they're designed with sleep foam, which is a very different thing. So just because it was always okay before doesn't mean it's okay now. And I really want to get that message out that every parent wants their child safe. Mm-hmm. And some practices that, you know, when I was little, we didn't have car seats. We know that car seats have saved tens of thousands of lives. So we need to get past that sort of, it was good enough for me, it was good enough for them, and use some of the science and also an understanding that mattresses have changed since we were kids. So.
Wouldn't it be exciting if the sleep sacks could become sort of the 2020s version of car seats, and they could be in every infant's household and readily available, and have people helping to teach young parents how to use them, and
to have the kids sleep on their back is very important. So the little sleep sack on the front, say this side up.
Mm-hmm.
So just to remind parents that, you know, babies will roll over, I know, but before they can roll over, it's really important, and whenever you can, to start babies on their back sleeping.
Yeah, well, it's great to hear Connecticut's Office of Early Childhood is working so hard to combat this leading cause of infant death in the United States, sudden infant death syndrome, sudden unexplained infant death, and other issues related to the loss of, especially recently, of so many young children here in Connecticut. And great to hear that once again you're heading up the situation, Commissioner Bai. Beth Bai is the recently installed Commissioner of the Connecticut Office of Early Childhood, working with a great team in Hartford and across the state who deeply value the importance of the first years of a child's life and bring to our Connecticut residents the skills, knowledge, support, and passion to meet the unique needs of every child here in Connecticut. Commissioner Bai, once again, congratulations on the appointment.
Thank you so much, John.
You're going to obviously do a great job, and I look forward to chatting with you again.
Yeah, and thanks for getting the word out, helping us.
You've been listening to our award-winning public affairs program, For the People. The opinions expressed on this broadcast represent those of our guests and host. If you have a suggestion for a guest, an issue, or a PSA relevant to the audience and communities we serve, you must make a request for airtime in writing to me via email at john.voket, that's john.voket, at connoisseurct.com. We do not accept pitches or requests for coverage by phone. Remember, no part of this program may be copied, disseminated, or rebroadcast without permission of Connoisseur Media. Our public file, reflecting the full scope of our station's responsiveness to critical issues in the communities we serve, can be reviewed upon request during normal business hours at 440 Wheeler's Farms Road in Milford or on our station website. Our theme music is by Rick Miller and Scott's, with original music by Noel Viette. I'm Director of Public Affairs, John Voket. Join us again at this time next week for more conversation and important information on the award-winning For the People. Don't forget, you can listen to this and other For the People podcasts anytime on iTunes or under the podcast tab on our station's website. Until this time next week, thanks for listening.